Well, friends, welcome to a new season of the Right Side Up Power Shift Edition. This is a beautiful collaboration between World Vision and me, and it's a wonderful delight to be working with them in their work around the world. And there's going to be a lot of things we're learning here, a lot of things from World Vision workers from around the world, but also from all kinds of people who are at the intersection of power shifting. So this is from technology, the shifting power dynamics of what technology is doing. This is internal work, counseling. This is our economic systems shifting, even capitalism, the way that our politics work and the way that our businesses work. This is theological shifts of evangelism and what that looks like in these days. I mean, we are going to talk, folks. This season is fire. If you haven't checked out the Right Side Up season one, that's the first collaboration with World Vision and me. And it's really walking through the Beatitudes, and we're asking voices from around the world who know what it means to be blessed in that way to share with us the secrets of the kingdom and what they've been learning along the way. That still ministers to me, that season. And actually, it has become a course. So you can go to daniellestrickland.com/rightsideup, or you can go to worldvision, wvi.org/rightsideup, and you can access that season as a course with a bit of a workbook to help you through that. But this season is on power and right side up power. And I am praying that God will help us, me included, to understand how to identify my power, and then also how to use and leverage my power for his kingdom come, and to get myself out of the center of that. I'm so privileged that you're along for this journey. Check out the show notes for all the links to all the things, but we're thrilled you're here. And I pray for us all that God would help us see this disruption in this cultural season, this era, as an invitation to partner with him for God's kingdom come.
Good to see you. It looks like, to me, faith tech is really doing well, huh? Just globally.
I mean, yeah, you and I, we connected early when all this stuff started. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. I didn't expect any of this. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, I'm coming not from tech. You know, that's not my background. My background's business, you know, divinity kind of school, theology, church planting. Yeah. And now I'm amongst all these absolutely wonderful human beings that love Jesus that are trying to figure out, like, God gave me these super unique skills, and I'm in this industry that feels so distant from God, and I feel like I'm the only one. Like, what do I do? It's like, now I think what's happening is it feels like faith tech is a small little subset of a global movement that God's doing, because we get people reaching out every day now from all around the world. I mean, we get two applications a week from someone who wants to start faith tech in their city.
Yeah.
Like, we have over 100 people who want to do this around the world now.
Yeah.
And so, like, something else is going on where it's like, you have all these people who are starting to realize and discover, like, God's gifted me in this thing that is incredibly impactful on the world and on individuals. And I want to steward it well for his sake.
Right. Right.
But what do I do, and who do I do it with? And it just happens to be, we're able to help with that, you know? So it's cool to be a part of something much bigger that God's doing, that we're just kind of a subset.
James, I love this. So this podcast series is a power shift. It's right side up. So it's about how the kingdom is right side upping some power things. And so we're talking about everything from, like, racism to the patriarchy, of course, to, like, social responsibility and business and how we do business. And then, of course, I wanted to talk about technology and then this kingdom right side upping, like this kingdom agenda that God has to use absolutely everything, but to shift it so that it could be used well. So I couldn't think of anybody better than you. Thanks, partly because of your own journey, and then also because of what you're stewarding and how, like you just described, this kind of almost like awakening. And I feel like when technology was first introduced, in terms of like the web and like this interdigital world and this interconnectedness, there was a lot of energy around this is going to change everything, which it did for sure. And, but like, I think the hopeful energy at the beginning was sort of like flattening structure, like, you know, giving voice and power back to the people, you know, there was this kind of real genuine. And then it and took a then. Shift. And it's like the, this like, oh, what are we going to like, just this, this general human and maybe even demonic power kind of took over and said, oh, hang on a second. And then it kind of reasserted itself within technology. So now we're like enslaved. Now we're like oppressed. Now you have these like big corporate giants who are making all the money at the expense of the worker. So it's almost like it's doing the exact opposite. It's distancing us instead of connecting us. Like, so, okay. So talk me through your thoughts around technology in general, and then this kind of shift that you're feeling. And I have a hunch that it's an awakening. Everyone feels this happening, that they don't want this to be what this world is. And that we want to do something. And how does Jesus lead us there?
Yeah, that's so good. Man, so we're deep in thought on this. So this is such good timing too. Like So I think that the thing, the big thing that I'm seeing going on is the first question we're trying to ask is, what's God's view of technology? You know, it's like theology dictates everything else. You know, what we believe dictates everything else. And then what are the belief sets of the tech industry that are then also getting played out individually in us and in all of culture? Because what you're definitely seeing right now is the belief set of tech is influencing culture and humanity at a level that I feel like, I don't know if we've ever seen a particular industry actually start influencing a society at such great magnitude and globally. And so,
name some of those belief sets that you see at the, at the heart of technology or the industry.
So it's hard. It's hard because some of them are good, but maybe not great in the sense of Christ-centric, and then some of them are just not good at all. So for sure you have, you know, we talk in the language of there's exploitative technology, there's responsible technology, and there's redemptive technology. And so exploitative technology is we build technology to get from other people. It's like I win, you lose. That's the mentality of that building of technology. And and that's like trying to take technology to steal from others, or even the challenge here is it gets a little gray in that we want to build technology in a way that helps you find ease and efficiency. But do we really want that? Like, is that what we're after as humans on Earth, or the way God's created us? He hasn't created us for go after ease and make life efficient and jam more stuff into your already anxious, filled, stressed life. It's about rest. So we talk about rest over ease. We're like, rest over ease. Like, how do we not focus so much on ease? But the way we build technology sometimes can be so focused on like more efficient and make life easier. And then we're all stepping back right now. We're like, dude, not easier. Like, what is going on? So like, we're innovating at rapid pace, but it's not making life less stressful or less anxiety filled. It's making it more. So what's going on there? And I think, so there's this realm of clear exploitative technology to exploit you for your money, or to take you down a path of darkness. Then you have this gray area between exploitative and responsible, which is like, we're kind of stealing your time. Like, I'll never forget the CEO of Netflix once time was interviewed a few years ago, and he was on a panel and someone goes, hey, what's your biggest competitor? Netflix. And this was before ever all the big streaming came out. You know, he pauses and he goes, sleep. I kid you not. The CEO of Netflix was like, our greatest competitor is sleep.
Wow.
Now that posture is exploitative. Like that's damaging. Mm-hmm. That's like, mm-hmm. So the CEO of this one company just wants you to stay up longer and not be healthy, so you consume more content and entertainment.
Yeah, which, and you can see the little ways they do that, right? Where it's like the next show just starts, right? Like, and you have to intentionally shut it off instead of intentionally turn it on. Like just those, like you can see how the technology is built to make you a consumer, which really ends up enslaving you to this, to whatever this is. Yeah.
And it's like a lot of grandparents right now, they'll see a 3-year-old child play with an iPad and they'll be like, oh, my grandson is brilliant. Like the next Steve Jobs, they know how to use an iPad.
Right.
And then you go talk to a guy named Josh Banco, who's the creator of the iPad, believer, loves Jesus. Mm. He's like, oh yeah, like I created it so anyone can use it. Like the technology was designed so that a 3-year-old could navigate its use.
Right. Right.
So think about it. Sort of like when that iPad came out and Steve Jobs was interviewed, someone asked him, they're like, hey, what does your daughter think of this? He's like, oh no, I don't let her use it. You're like, hold on. And then you find out so there's a high school in Silicon Valley, a private high school where it's technology free private high school. And over 80% of the students' parents work in tech, executives in tech.
Yeah, I have heard that. And I also, you know, the closer you are to the realities, like the known realities of the consequences of this as a dominant way we live, the more aware you are of the danger of it. So that is, I always feel like that should be an alarming, you know, a red flag for every parent and everyone everywhere to say like, guys, if the people closest to this are like, I won't let my kids near it, what is it saying? You know, and then also, you know, back to that like Christian dilemma. So those are some of the, I love that, the three, and then there's the redemptive.
Exploitative.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's like clear exploitative. There's this gray almost between exploitative and responsible. And I think even in this realm.
Well, like, you know, what is that joke? Somebody said, the wife said to the husband, I heard Alexa's listening to us. You know, and the husband laughs. He says, oh, that's hilarious, and starts laughing. And then the wife starts laughing. And then Alexa starts laughing.
Yes, that's so good. Right. So I think what's happening there is the behind the scenes on this is really fascinating. So because with Faith Tech, our community are predominantly believers that love Jesus working in tech, working in these spaces.
Right.
What's really helpful to know for a lot of people is that those that are working on this are genuinely wrestling through a lot of this as well. Mm-hmm. And there's like this calling to say, like, get out of that space. Like you're leading us down this exploitative path.
Right.
But then you meet people that are like, but if I leave, and I'm this gospel voice within my company, what are we, where is the trajectory of that company going, right? Like a friend of ours, and I don't know if you know Paul Burns. So he's in Toronto. Yeah. So he leads Twitter Canada. We had an event recently talking about politics and technology and big tech. And he was kind enough to join us. And a really impactful moment was when Paul said, one of the panelists was kind of pushing on him, and he's like, dude, God has called me here. Do I agree with everything we're doing? No, but I love Jesus. I openly talk about Jesus, and I'm seeing that influence play out where I work. He's like, do you want all of us to leave, or do you want us to actually like play a role in helping us move the trajectory from exploitative or that gray area in between towards responsible and towards redemptive technology? And so, yeah, I think there's this tension that's existing right now, even within the tech industry, obviously, but believers within tech that are saying, what voice should I have here? And And how do I even view all of this? Like, how do I think about all this? And so talking about like shifting and flipping things on its end, I love Jesus, and Jesus was super smart. And so when he says stuff, it's like, pay attention.
Yeah.
And what does he say in the Sermon on the Mount when he's like, you heard that it was said this, but I say this. Mm-hmm. And that whole actually framework of thinking about culture and the gospel, mm-hmm. I find really helpful. Mm-hmm. So what we've been doing, and this kind of, again, lives in this gray area of exploitative and response. Maybe we got to come up with another word for that in the middle there, Danielle, is we'll look at big things in tech, like a huge thing that tech has been pushing that now a lot of other companies do is being customer centric in building your products and in building your organization. And the idea there is build what your customer wants. Don't just go build something and then hope they want it, but at every step along the way, continuously ask your customer this phrase, what do you want? Mm-hmm. And that's being customer centric. It's a very common business practice now. Now we're starting to ask, though, is that Jesus centered?
Right.
Like actually building what somebody wants may not actually be the right thing. You know, maybe what they want is actually at a deeper level, peace and rest. And what they're...
Yeah, like maybe they don't know what they really actually want, but they, like, you know, Caesar wants a Colosseum. But is that... Mm. Do we want to give Caesar what he wants? You know, like,
That's good. Mm-hmm. Right? And so it's just starting to ask those questions. And I think those are those kinds of moments where I really believe if as believers working in tech and those like anyone else, if you know others that are working in tech, working through a lot of this stuff, if you can be a gospel voice like that, which is a small thing going, is should we be building this? Like, is that the right thing? Let's work this out. Mm-hmm. Those are powerful conversations that happen internally that then affect now billions of people, some of those decisions that happen internally. So, yeah. So that's
I love on your website. I love on your website where you say like, okay, so it's not going away. Like, and I think that's a really important, because I think sometimes we're in this debate where it's like, should we be, should we not? And even the naivety and maybe the arrogance to say like, you know, to people in tech, you should get out. Yeah. When people are in businesses that are completely unethical, like when people are in, like, you know, you might just be the janitor of a business, or you might work on Wall Street, or you're a fantastic, you know, financial investor, and we just sort of applaud you without any critique about like how you made that money and what that investment means in a global economy where people are never been more poor. So I just think like that divide between the rich and the poor has never been bigger. And yet we keep applauding people in business. So you just sort of go like, we should apply that same, you know, not the same principle that we should just like, oh, they're amazing in technology, so we should applaud them. But this idea of maybe God has you here. Like, I think that in all the stuff, and this is this shift, I think, is like, rather than allowing this thing to happen to you and you just needing a job and happen to have some skills, so then I'll work here.
Yeah.
This shift of power to say, actually, kingdom power is, you have it.
Yeah,
you have it. And it's for such a time as this. So how do we move? And what have been your best practices for moving from even responsible technology to actually redemptive technology? And I think there's no, I don't know that we, I think we're so used to having this like onslaught of like technology's bad for you. And it's like bad for our kids. And it's like the reason pornography is, you know, it's, and we attach so much negativity to it. And then I also think, you know, it's gotten the gospel to the nations, you know, I mean, I literally, when I'm with an Uber driver, I take the Jesus film clip that I can get in, you know, over 156 languages in their dialect, and I'll show them a clip and their eyes will light up. I mean, we've never like you, like just you version, getting the word of God in people's original language and getting it all. I mean, I read the Bible with my friends from around the world every day together through this little app. So I mean, the capacity of technology is, and again, this idea that like, and I maybe this comes with your sense of who God is, But I think sometimes we're in danger, maybe because we're overwhelmed, but Christians are in danger of just being fatalistic instead of actually redemptive. And I think that, like, wait a minute, God's going to use everything in every way to bring about his kingdom. So what can we do with technology, in technology, to actually redeem not only it? I don't even think technology needs to be redeemed, but to use it as a tool of redemption. I mean, that's, it's just a tool, right? Technology is a tool like anything else. Money's a tool, right? Even power itself is a tool. So how do we use it?
Yeah. And so I think, and so, and kind of loop in that, that exploitative, responsible, redemptive, you know, we said exploitative is like, I win, you lose. When we get into responsible tech, now it's kind of like tech for good is a common thing in tech, or, you know, I win, we win. And in some cases that's good. And that's, you know, the good is good. And hey, that's fine. But when you move now into redemptive, it's like, I sacrifice, we win. Your whole posture is now different. You know, it's Jesus, it's sacrifice, servanthood, giving of yourself. Was the Bible say, consider others better than yourself?
Right.
That's a completely different level. So now when you use technology, or you build with technology, or you create technology, the question isn't how do I win out of this? It's not even I win, we win. It's like, how do I create this or use this in such a way that I give of myself with it? It's like, it's like going to Hebrews 2, right? Hebrews, I love Hebrews 12. So Hebrews 11, all about the great giants of faith, right? Amazing people with like wild stories of turning their back on people and God. And yet he still is like, their faithfulness through even the wildness is beautiful. And then it says, therefore, you're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. Throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles us, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Looking to Jesus, the author or founder, which in the tech world we like to say, the founder and perfecter of our faith. And there, that calling is like, throw off everything that hinders, right? So when you look in, like, how do I live in this world that is exploiting my time, like pulling me in with technology? There are ways, like, to put the right boundaries around your life. Like, we all, I like to say this, was like, figure out the idolatry side of technology, put technology in its proper place, build the right boundaries around it, and then watch it just redeem and do beautiful, wonderful things. But you have to be working on both. Okay, so that's a side note to the idolatry exploitative side that loops in, because when we get to redemptive, man, there is some amazing stuff going on that nobody is hearing about, that technology is playing a role in. Literally, lives being saved, people come to know Jesus, people being discipled in like closed places. So I could rattle off 100 stories. Maybe I'll tell you a couple though, because they're so inspiring to me. So when Faith Tech started, this was 5 years ago, we ran a hackathon, which is like a retreat for geeks. It's amazing. Love it. It's like, it's like you take a big problem, and in one weekend, you gather together, sometimes even one day, you figure out what the problem is, you come up with a solution, and you build it in one weekend. And what's so beautiful about that is not only are you building a product, but you're building relationship, and you're actually like, so for us, the ethos, as a side tangent, is we're trying to reimagine discipleship right now. And what we're seeing is that's so beautiful is discipleship happens in the most beautiful ways on the journey of building something. So I'm not against, you know, small groups and just sitting down and chatting about the Bible, but if you go out and you build something together and you create together, the journey of getting to that building is absolutely beautiful, right? And so for us, we're like, go build a product together. And we're going to teach you all these things about redemptive over responsible and Christ-centric over customer-centric, and get to know each other along the way. That I think is really beautiful. Okay, back to the hackathon. So we do this hackathon, and just before, days before this hackathon, there's maybe 30 people. I had found out that 8,000 people a month go on Google and search the phrase "how to kill yourself." Mm-hmm. And the top search result was 7 easy, painless ways to kill yourself.
Wow.
I kid you not. And I'm like, guys, what do we do? This is awful. Two web developers, a communications manager of a charity, and a psychotherapist who happened to be there setting up, buy the domain, Danielle, howtokillyourself.org. And instead of "here's how to do it," the top the top of the website says, "you're not alone." And 3 months after that, one of the developers on the team who built that website, she calls me. She's like, "we need to chat." And I'm like, "what's up?" She goes, the night before, she was out with her friend for coffee. She was telling her friend about the website she was building. And the friend, like, the way they tell the story is very powerful. He grabbed her arm, is like, "what's the domain of that website?" She's like, howtokillyourself.org. And the friend starts weeping because the night before that, she went online to figure out how to kill herself. Landed on that website, and she's like, "that site saved my life."
Wow.
And I'm like, dude, when could a website save somebody's life? Like, right. Help bring them just the right time. And it's because, again, culturally, technology has shifted things for us with how we deal with our problems.
Yeah.
Right. Historically, pre-internet, where did we go if we had a deep, dark secret? Someone we trusted, or the grave, like we're taken into the grave. Now you have Google. But if this top search results are exploitative or even responsible in some cases, they're not redemptive. That's not always the best thing that people need. And what gets to the top in search engines isn't always what's most helpful, but what's most popular. And so those aren't the same thing. And so that's like one story of like, wow, how could a group of people come together, build a technology that actually can do incredible things? And I mean, we're seeing stuff happening in like the Middle East where there's stuff happening with like VR and cybersecurity stuff, where these people, like, stories you can't tell that God's doing through technology to save people's lives, to see people come to know Jesus in ways that, like, I never even knew it was possible. But because the internet's become this hub of the world now, you can do stuff with the right redemptive posture and the right understanding and knowledge and skill set that we probably couldn't even imagine 20 years ago, you know?
Now, James, I love that hackathon story. I tell it a lot because I like it for many, many ways. Like, I like it because you kind of stumbled into something. I love this idea. And I even the idea before that idea of when I first met you and you were like trying to do church incarnationally in a neighborhood. Yeah. And then you were like actually relating more to your neighbors via text or technology than you were in person. And you kind of had this like, wow. And I remember like even many, many years ago doing like a television show. And I was living incarnationally in the neighborhood of the downtown East Side, just trying to be friends with my neighbors. And I ended up doing this television show and I had to drive out to Burnaby like an hour away. And I was just the whole way going, this is such a stupid idea, Danielle. Like, this is not what it is you're trying to do. And then I remember the next day, everyone on the street going, "hey, I saw you on and just wanted to talk to me, because they saw me on this show." And I just like, what is happening right now? So like, I am more connected to my neighbors when I'm driving to do this. And I think social media has that same power right now. We're like, now it's like every, you know, TikTok stars now, you know, and actually TikTok's an interesting, also kind of exploitative and kind of not, like, I see that kind of gray area and also responsible, where like after a certain amount of time, someone will come on, I'm assuming from TikTok, that says, "hey, you've been scrolling for a while. You know, you should put your phone down and take a break." And you're just like, whoa, like they know this is so addictive. It's just like nonstop dopamine, right, to your brain. Like you're just like, I need another hit. So, but they are, it's so addictive, but they have somebody from TikTok say, "hey, get a drink, eat some food,
go pee." Your bladder is going to explode.
Right. And it's like, how? Like, you must, like, so you know these people are aware that these tools are so powerful and so consuming. So I like a whole bunch. I like that you said, like, actually, we should be thinking critically through this with our kids and with ourselves and limiting, putting fences on the oppressive nature of these things because they are so powerful. But I also love this idea of even the stumbling into, like, okay, this isn't even about, like, is technology good or bad? This is more a conversation about, like, what's God doing in us? How can God do it in us collectively? And how do we use our gifts and our skills to actually bring redemptive practices into technology? And I mean, I guess that's an uphill battle, you know, like I guess this will never not be an area of tension fraught with, like, this is going to be a fight. And I think as soon as the internet was commodified, you know, this is where it lost its, you know, original goodness, right? Like, it just became this, like, competitive, like, I need to make as much money as I possibly can at the expense of everybody. It just kind of, like, capitalism grabbed the internet and like choked it of its beauty.
And it's like so good friends of mine that run a really cool podcast called Device and Virtue, where they're talking about this stuff really deeply all the time. And the language they'll use that's really helpful is when you see a technology shift from a toy, you know, like gaming, often a lot of innovative technology starts. So VR is big in gaming. That's actually, this is really, VR is a very important case study actually right now, especially with everything talking about the metaverse and all that kind of stuff. VR, where it got its most early push is in the porn industry. You also saw it with video and picture compression. So that was, again, the porn industry. Porn brought being able to make payments online. They brought that in. So you have to be aware of, like, some of the most innovative technologies sometimes actually have their seeds in exploitative. Now, that doesn't mean you can't still redeem those things. You have to understand who's driving that. VR then has now moved from this toy to now a tool that's getting played out in business. And that's usually that moment, that shift, when some of these technologies are going to get used by a lot more people. And when it moves into that tool category, especially for business, that's when you start, the financial piece starts really kicking in a big way. And then there's this word in the Bible, greed, you know? And it's like, that is inherent in us. And so I think, again, that's why when we were talking about how important it is to put tech in its proper place in our lives individually and in our families, it is an uphill battle. It's very challenging, very difficult, because there's so many systems behind that are pushing up against that. And I'll say, to add to that, most people I know that are even thinking about this stuff deeply are trying to do this alone. And I don't get it.
Right.
I'm like, we aren't designed to do this alone. Now, we're moving in the direction, because as we build and use more technology, so much of technology is designed for individualism. Like, it is called the iPod and the iPad and the iPhone for a reason, because its design is for an individual to purchase it and to use it. So in order to actually discern its use in our life and its purpose in our life, you have to do it with others and in community. That's why I love Mennonite and Amish communities in these conversations. Because you know what they do? They go, okay, you want a new piece of technology. We're going to decide as a community whether this is right or wrong for it to be a part of our lives. Am I making those, like, are we doing that with the next phone we're buying or the next new technology we're purchasing? We're just like, looks good to me. And it's like, I think that's again where the gospel and a redemptive view kicks in, is we're not meant to do or make those decisions in isolation. And you have to work now extra hard in the sense of getting the right people around you to start making even those kinds of decisions.
I love that. I mean, I love also that awareness of like, this is pushing, this is again, that like undercurrent of what is this dominant power that needs to shift, those values that this tech industry brought with it. And this autonomous individualism, you know, which is so already such a prevalent idolatry of, you know, Western culture. And you see it's pushing you more and more so that you have this, you know, like I've got a 19-year-old son who doesn't really know how to interact socially outside of the phone, right? Partly because he's been held up for 2 years in a basement, you know, like even all of his classes are online. So it's like that has not helped. But who has been, you know, literally that's the way that he's learned. And so like an actual physical interaction with another person is really difficult and new, and like using your left hand, like you don't even know how this works. Right.
It's like, so I have a 6-year-old son and we do daddy dates every other week. So we go and we go somewhere so that we can sit down and talk and hang out and just like, and so what I'm teaching him right now is how to have a conversation.
Right.
And so we start off, I'd be like, hey, buddy, hey, let's review. Like, how do we have a conversation? So there's three things I'm trying to teach him. Right. One is listen, like pay attention to somebody. Two is ask questions.
Yes.
And number three is look the person in the eye.
Wow.
Because when you think about it, it's like, those are some hyper basics.
Yeah.
But here's what's super important about all three of those things is the technology to which we interact with push us away from those things.
Yes.
So if you break those things down, it's like, look in the eye. How do I look you in the eye when I'm looking down on a phone?
Right.
So again, the very technology we're using is pulling us away from this fundamental piece of a human interaction, right?
Yes.
Then it's like, listen. Well, how do I listen to a person speaking if I'm listening to someone I don't know entertain me or communicate with me more than I'm listening to somebody trying to tell me or talk to me?
Right.
Another fundamental thing. And then ask questions. If our whole posture is listening to strangers, then we start realizing, again, this hyper connection back to expressive individualism, but it's like that whole push is against like give of myself. Right. I sacrifice, we win.
My time, attention, my interest. This is all part of, Christ-likeness. Right.
Right. And so I think that's really helpful to think through. And another framework that's really good is like, if you look at the fundamental characteristics of God, again, you can see some of this played out with technology. Again, this is like, it's a bit alarmist, but it's helpful. I'm saying this because you need, again, we need to know the structure that sits behind all this in order to give it the attention it deserves in our life. But like, what's one aspect of God that's super important we all understand? He is all-knowing. What is Google's kind of end mission right now? Right?
Right.
Organize the world's information, essentially become like all-knowing of what's going on. Right? And then you can go down the line of like, God is all-powerful. God is always present. Right. And actually, so if you do the work to look at the way so much of the direction of a lot of technology is in moving, it's, and no one may say this explicitly, but it's implicitly happening that we're trying to become like God.
Right.
We're trying to become gods through this technology to replace God or move him away or push him out. And so,
to play that out, the original results of trying to be like God are shame, guilt, fear, disconnection, blame, you know, and the separation of the thing that God wanted to bring together. So that's an interesting thing. When we just think about the fruit itself of like technology unchecked, you have this like, wow, this is a divisive, you know, this is a tool that actually separates us even from ourselves. So
yeah.
Amazing. Wow. This is so good. Well, if you could give like, you know, just your top three, when we're talking about this power shift, and you've given so many helpful things and the website,
faithtech.com.
And if you are in, you're listening to the podcast and you're in technology, you're in a field and you're just sort of like, I never thought through this stuff before. I just kind of have this job and you want to join faithtech.com. come, go there. There's an application. You can join the community and be part of this shifting of using this power in a redemptive way in the world. You know, that's what we want to see. And I'm really holding out for that, because I think I think God wants to redeem everything. Yep. And there's no reason why not. Why technology
all things
can't
new.
Be redeemed?
He will make all things new, you know? Yeah. And I mean, resources. Yeah. So you'll see, like, if you go on Faith Tech, there's resources. We have like different articles, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. If you're into reading, buy the book From the Garden to the City by my friend John Dyer out of Dallas. It's a book we just give away all the time. I mean, it's just it's a very foundational biblical theology of technology. He goes from the beginning to the end using the creation, fall, redemption, restoration framework to look at God's view of technology and the way it's playing out in culture today. It's just really good, like, basic. But when I remember I read this 5 years ago, I was like, well, I didn't know any of that. Like, this is so fascinating. And so I found that really helpful. And then, yeah, there's different articles out there. This is honestly one of our goals as Faith Tech is there's so many wonderful voices and people thinking about this stuff deeply. But because even technology has grown so fast, the kind of modern digital technology, we're trying to think about this stuff deeply. Mm-hmm. And those that are, we're trying to go, how do we get you heard more? How do, like, write something, say something, make a video about it. Like, let's tell those stories, because there are some really good thinkers about all this. And we just need to get them heard a little bit more right now, because we're all struggling so much to understand all of this.
And I saw, you know, just really fantastic thought-provoking articles around AI, cryptocurrency, you know, this virtual reality, which the metaverse is going to apparently help usher
take
us
over
into
the world or something.
Right. Something. And so, you know, there's some really good and I think really helpful, you know, because the tendency is just to go like run and hide, unplug. Yeah. I'm joining the, you know, the Mennonites. I'm out. Yeah. And actually, that might be for some people that
I was going to say for somebody, you might like Hebrews 12. You might need to unplug at least for a season.
A teenage boy who was struggling with pornography, who literally went to the woods and buried his iPad and just said, I'm done.
Wow.
And needed to, like, in order for him to get free from that connection, he had to bury his iPad. And I was like, you know what? That is a beautiful Christ-like response to something that's harming you. So, and then as you get free, you know, there might be some other some different possibilities, but
totally. And I think this is even like, this is some of that, you know, rest, Sabbath, like these practices, some people might be like, I remember I had a moment 3.5 years ago, I'm on my phone in the living room. My son comes up to me and he's like, Dad, where are you? And I'm like, you know, my answer was nowhere. Like, that's the problem. And so what I did was I was like, I have to do something about this. So I did a digital Sabbath. So one day, no digital technology, no screens. I was like, well, we can use, you know, the fridge's game. Let's keep the fridge running. But we're like, no screens for a day. And it turned into, we started something called the Digital Sabbath Challenge. Can you go 1 month, 1 day a week with no digital technology? And it's meant, and there's thousands of people, like New York Times mentioned it, like all this cool stuff started happening around it, because you're now realizing, like, we're all like, we need a break. Like, this thing is the God in our life. So,
well, and also, like, I don't know how it went for you, but I used to do screen-free Sabbaths, and this is like before the iPhone, you know, and I found it difficult. Like, I was shaking. My husband's like trying to win the world for Jesus one email at a time. So he was like, you know, and my son walked around stomping around calling it Damnation Day, you know, and I was like, no, this is for your freedom, you know?
Right.
I mean, it is, you start like, just like any kind of fasting where you remove this thing that you thought, it's totally good. And as soon as you remove it, you're like, whoa, this has such a hold on me. I had no idea. And then it loosens its grip, you know, as you get into that pattern. But I love that. That's a great, you know,
or like,
folks that are,
like, turn your internet set it up so your internet can go off. You know, right. It's like, you know, for Karen, my wife and I, it's like internet goes off. So 10 p.m., the internet shuts down. So we each share the password. So I have to ask for permission from my wife if I want to stay online past 10 o'clock.
It's like on Friday you do, or what day do you do?
That's throughout the week.
Okay. Oh, after 10, the internet's off in your house.
Yeah. 10 goes back on like 5 in the morning.
Wow. I didn't even know you could turn it on and off.
Totally. Yeah. There's tools. I know. Isn't that hilarious? Right. It's like, you didn't even know you could turn it on and off.
Right.
But there's tools that you can use to do that.
Wow.
And so it's like, when did we have this idea that access to everything all the time
was good? A good idea. Right.
We just kind of fell into it again, not thinking through the implications of that.
Wow.
Right. I had a youth pastor once tell me, he's like, nothing good happens past midnight. And I was like, you're being a doorknob. And I'm like, wow, that's like some super cool youth pastor advice, man. Once you get older.
Right.
And so it's like, funny. Turn them off. It's like, put your phone to bed. So like, we don't let technology in bedrooms. You know, we have our bedroom, kids' bedroom, not allowed in. That's a no-no for technology. Yeah. And it's just, again, those little practices that and structures, that the habits that can help you in this, putting technology in its proper place in your life. And then
because you want technology, freedom it gives you. Right. You want technology to be the tool, not you.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Who's the tool in my life?
That's right. Is a phone tool or am I the tool? That's right. The phone's using me instead of me using the phone. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that freedom can actually liberate us. And even within the tech world. And so I've met tons. I met a few of your collaborators.
Yeah.
And several of them were like, I don't have a phone with a screen.
Right.
Like they're like flip phoning because they just want a phone. They don't want. And I again, it's like the closer you are to this thing, the more dangerous this thing is. And you're like, whoa, this is
totally important. We're also as a community dealing with that tension all the time. Right.
Yes.
The more you learn about this, I think the more you're like, I got to take this super seriously. But again, I think for us, what happens in the church, I find is pastors are really struggling to give language to all this. Mm-hmm. What we tend to do as pastors is hammer it. So we're just like, we just hammer, like, are you on your phone too much? That's an idol. Stop.
Mm-hmm.
But then like, what do we do with that? You know? And so but then also missing the opportunity side of it, though. We're like, hey, let's get our podcast out. Let's stream all of our stuff. Like, we want to use it. And then we're going to hammer you on Sunday.
Right.
It's like, and that's again, like I'm not going to come at pastors in a way that's like, man, you're just doing it all wrong. But it's like, to understand, if you're looking at culture and you're seeing your people are predominantly being influenced by the technology around them, this is one of the most influential things in their lives. Mm-hmm. If your fundamental calling as a pastor or a leader is to move your people towards Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. With the things around them, then I think this is one of those incredibly important things in our lives right now that we need to get serious about understanding, because it's like the primary motif of culture right now is our digital technology. And so
absolutely,
how do we equip pastors? How do we even think about all this? Is there are resources out there. There is help up there, trying to get it heard more, which is what I think we're trying to do, but there is help out there. And so,
well, thanks, James. That's great. No, thanks. Thanks for all that you're doing. Thanks for Faith Tech. And thanks for helping shift the power and to kingdom kind. And we're in this with you. So thanks for doing it. And I've only ever been a supporter, always a fan.
Thanks, Daniel.
And whatever I can do to help, of course, anytime.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much for being on this podcast. Appreciate you.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thanks. And all the best with the speaking stuff coming up.
Brave Global is an organization that is near and dear to my heart. It seeks to come alongside and coach communities and churches and groups, nonprofits, in how to reach vulnerable girls before they're trafficked. It is such an incredible strategy. And there's journals, there's a new journal out, there's a book of survivor stories that's just come out called Brave in Real Life. There's so many things. There's events that you could host. There are Brave Circle support groups. There are just so many things that are on offer in order to mobilize people to help in the fight against trafficking. And there's never been a better time to get involved in this than right now. So please go to braveglobal.org, or if you're in Canada, braveglobalcanada.org, and check out all of Brave, and please join us in this fight. It is so key right now.